That should be working. Yeah. Okay.
I can also access it on one of the computers.
Or we can also forward it to Gmail. So I just sent an email with a Word document. I mean, if you type it into Google, into Gmail, it should come up. If you're logged into your Cornell account, it says the same. I could also just take my laptop.
He talks so fast!
I'm so excited.
He's so excited. I
Can't do it. Pray no bam goes on. Oh! I mean, Christ, I don't know.
Everybody talking.
Thank you.
How are you?
Thank you. Yeah.
But if we send, when we use, but if we send the SAGPSA with like the student board support, then it's a different story. Because in the SA one and the GPSA one, we can say,
All right, guys, we're going to start in 1 minute. All our presenters have their seats.
And I was invited by Matt to come talk to you all today, so thank you for having me. I've grown along with Amy Haber, who's one of the student sustainability coordinators at Cornell, and she loved GIFs, with the very GIFs. So, Amy, if you want to pass them out, I'll talk to people. So, we are kicking off Recycle Mania at Cornell. It just kicked off this week. It started on Sunday. And it's an international competition between colleges and universities focused on two things, mainly. The first is reducing the overall amount of waste that people and universities make. And then the second is to make sure that any waste that people do make or that the university makes is being sorted and diverted in the appropriate ways. So this is a newsletter that went out on Monday, and this went out to everyone that's on our listserv, our sustainable campus listserv. One key feature of this program that I want to make sure to highlight is we have organized our Recycle Mania steering committee, which is comprised of about 20 to 25 student leaders, faculty, and staff members. So it's a really integrated and shared governance approach to designing a campaign that rolls out to the entire campus. So just to highlight a few features, we have the difficult challenge of trying to figure out how to engage 30,000 people in reducing waste, which is not necessarily often like the first thing people get super excited about. So the sports that we're passing out are a nod to the idea that we are hoping that people choose to use not only reusable bottles or reusable mugs, which there are surveys that show that 94% of Cornell students are doing. So have we now taken a step further and start encouraging the habit of using reusable utensils, reusable to-go containers, so forth. So in our newsletter that went out on Monday and the newsletters that will be forthcoming through the Sustainable Campus newsletter, we're planning on highlighting not only some of the realities of Cornell's waste, that we're using over a million hot disposable cups every year that are going straight to the landfill. So any of the cups that you all are getting from the dining cafes, those are all destined for the landfill. Even if you put them in the recycling bins, they have a line item that makes them unrecyclable. So when we get down to the recycling center in Ithaca, they actually go into a conveyor belt and they're systematically picked off and just thrown into the landfill. So we really are trying to encourage people to not only, for the waste feature of this too, but there's an economic benefit as well. All of the dining units on campus give up to an 80-cent discount on any coffees, hot beverages, hot chocolates, specialty drinks, up to an 80-cent discount off of each of those, simply by you just bring your own mug and hand it to the cashier. We're really trying to get that message out. That mug club program has been in existence for a few years. So again, the key definition is this idea of waste minimization, reducing the overall waste that's produced on campus by using reusable materials, not buying things in the first place. And then once we have these materials that we want to get rid of, how are we making sure that they get diverted from the landfill, recycling, composting, plastic composting appropriately? So for the first week, we're really encouraging people to make less waste and sort your waste. One thing that we want to encourage everyone to do, like to have some ownership, is if you see something like cardboard-only signs, if you see cardboard-only, you might see them in Miller Street Hall, or your residence halls, or anywhere on campus, those are outdated signs. So we just ask anyone to feel empowered to actually take those down. The university, as well as Tompkins County, has a single-stream recycling, which you all probably have seen signs for on campus. That means cardboard, paper, recycling, plastic, aluminum cans, tinfoil from the Hershey Kisses wrappers, all these things can go into the blue bins on campus. So the cardboard only is outdated and you're welcome to take those down. We have a number of ways for people to get involved in leadership positions, like the Compost Managers Program and the Sustainability Student Leaders Program that's kicking off. We want to highlight that the ECO Student Organization is hosting a leadership summit this upcoming Saturday in this room. And two other things that we for sure want to highlight is our big cornerstone event is this game day basketball game that's happening on Friday the 23rd from 7 to 9 p.m. in Bartels Hall. We actually got first place in this event for waste diversion in the entire Recycle Mania international competition back in 2016, so we're trying to reclaim that. And if you don't have any electronics that have met there and they're pretty much good for nothing. No one else can reuse them. You know, it's a failed product. Then we're having an ESIC Armenia Electronics Recovery Week where people can bring all their hard drives, which will be shredded on site by the RFI waste management team. And there's no charge for that. Typically in Tompkins County, you have to bring it down to the center and it costs, you know, per weight for any big TVs. So this is an initiative not only for students, faculty, and staff on campus, but also the entire Tompkins County community. So Cornell actually recycles hundreds of thousands of pounds of electronic waste during this, which is a big deal. So I don't know how much time I have, but that's all I have to say. Thank you all for having me. And we're hoping, especially since you all are some of the most important and well-known student staff or student leaders on campus, that you know, there's this idea of social cohesion, and people are more likely, the number one determinant of people adopting a behavior is if someone that they know and respect is doing that same behavior. So we're just hoping that you all, that's part of what I'm giving you all these sports, is that you'll be able to use them and roll out that reusable behavior as well. So for your time, should I take questions?
Yeah, so we do have a question, but before that, can you just share with us maybe your awareness of question on?
Sure. Yes, so it's Kimberly Anderson. It's KAB94.
All right, thank you. So the first question we have is from Bruce.
Howdy. Thank you for coming today. Just a quick question about the electronics recovery program. That's only for that week period, is that correct?
Yes.
And what do you recommend for students to do sort of for the long term? To get rid of their electronics and safe and efficient energy.
Right. So we do have recycling, electronics recycling that's available throughout the year. One great recommendation is to bring some of those materials to the Cornell store. They'll actually, for some phones, for instance, I've heard that if your phone that's no longer working, the Cornell store will actually give you a cash credit to be able to use to purchase more. So someone, I think, turned in an old iPhone and got something like a $30 gift card to the Cornell store, which they were able to buy headphones with. So that's one avenue. Something else is we encourage you all to actually organize your own electronics recycling events. Do that sounds like more work for you? But our office, the Campus Sustainability Office, will be more than happy to help partner with that. We actually did that with the College of Community Ecology last year too. They wanted to have something that was localized in the College of Community Ecology. So we were able to work with RFI, the waste management team, and do a recycling, an electronics recycling event there. The last thing I mentioned is we're in a process. I don't know if you've seen this, but we have a Google map that has layers of sustainable futures on campus. That's hard for me to do that one. And that's actually one of the initiatives that we are planning to continue with Recycle Media. The steering committee identified that we want to be able to give students as much information about where they can do these diversion activities across campus. So if you're familiar with these Cornell maps, some of the layers, where's the slide? Anyone have any idea what that was? Search. There we go. So right now, over the summer, we had the big red bikes added. So now you're able to see all those locations. There's information about the sustainability centers on campus, the hydration stations that took back the tap implemented with your help, the student Sunday's help back in the day. So we are planning on adding into there as well battery recycling stations, plastic film, so you can actually recycle like Ziploc bags and saran wrap. We do have plastic film recycling stations located all around campus. So that will be one option too, that people will just be more aware. In the Great Outside Police Center or in Barton Hall, I think they have a medication drop-off box that goes year-round, and I also think they do have an electronics recycling drop-off as well. So people can just drop off the box, and then since you know, there's data security issues, those are secured boxes that then are given back to the RFI Recycling Center, making sure that
And I guess a question more so for the assembly members rather than you. How many of you have seen that maps before of the Cornell maps? Okay, well, just wondering. Thanks.
I think you were looking at that. That's it.
Okay. Can I show just one last thing?
Yeah, please.
1 minute. So I also pulled up just how to get the emails. So even in the ALS 2000 class, which Matt is a part of, I don't mean to keep singling you out and telling everyone what this is about. But we actually had a number of people just all over campus say, like, where are these emails coming from? Like, how do I get access to these emails? So our office's website is the sustainablecampus.cornell.edu website. And then if you scroll on down, there is a section right here, Get Sustainability News. And you just add your email, your full email, not just your name, hit sign up. So if you want to stay up to date, this is an 8-week competition. We're in week one. I encourage you all to pull that up, sign up for the newsletter, and then feel free to disseminate your posts.
We actually have one more question.
I just want to know how you were like currently advertising. If you have a Facebook event or and also how the SA can help you advertise.
Yeah, great question. So we do have a campaign communications plan, and this is the first week of it, so we're slowly getting through it. We're going to be advertising making through Denise Cassaro, so having a few tips posted through there, specifically focused on students. And then there's also up to 10,000 or so faculty and staff on campus too, so we're pushing out through the Human Resources Career Life Digest, through the call print, in connections with the Chronicle. We're hoping to work with some of the students at the Cornell Design, put out some ads too. Mainly, what I'd say is the second main steering committee is comprised of a number of student leaders around campus, and we're asking them to infuse through their channels the messages too. Right now, we have about 4,500 people that's on our sustainable Cornell listserv, so we really could use all the help to basically get you all to sign up for it, and then just send it out to our organizations if you haven't seen someone else, send it out across your districts.
Okay, so I thought that was the last question. We actually have one more here.
Hello. I chaired the infrastructure front committee, and one of the projects we're working on is installing discuss that.
Just when is after?
Right after we get being done. Yeah.
Okay, no, that's really good. I just have to go talk to Brad students at the end of the hour.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah.
Okay, so that is it. Thanks so much.
Okay, thank you. And did anyone else want to give a sport here? Anybody here in the audience? Do you all do sports? Yeah. Oh, I did good sport. All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
All right, next, we'll look to the microphone. When Brooke gets back. Huh? Okay, sure. So this is a microphone. If any members of the community have anything you want to share with the assembly, we're asking questions. Now's the time for anything at all. How about if you guys have with that, we'll be closing the microphone. We'll go straight to new business. This is Resolution 28, Puerto Rico Debt and Disclosure. Zach? Whenever you guys are ready.
All right, good evening, assembly members. I'd like to start off by thanking all members of the community who showed up in support also, I'm also joined by Chris Arson today. Probably is the president of Cornell Impact Investment, and Chris is the president of the Puerto Rican Students Association, vice president of Cornell Welcomes Refugees, and on the executive board of the Christian Union. I first learned of the connection between Cornell's investing activities and the plight of the Puerto Rican people shortly after the devastation of Hurricane Maria, when an organization by the name of the Hedge Flippers put together an initiative to hold 28 university endowments accountable for their holdings in hedge funds that invested in Puerto Rican debt. My involvement with the Roosevelt Institute on campus allowed me to get on board with this initiative and collaborate with people interested on this. We will start us off by walking through the details and the investments, followed by Chris, who will put this into context of what this means for Puerto Rican people. I'll close by explaining how a resolution addresses these problems and what Cornell can do to make a strong commitment to economic justice and operational transparency.
Hello, everyone. Thank you for allowing me the opportunity to take the floor today. There's a lot of research work into the creation of this resolution. None of this would have been possible without the hard work of Zach Schneider, Chris Arsene, and some of our other colleagues at the Roosevelt Institute and the Hedge Clippers. As mentioned in the resolution, Valpost Group, managed by Carmen, owns approximately $931 million in bonds issued by Puerto Rico as of January 2018. The Puerto Rican debt that Valpost owns is known as Bofina debt, named after the issuing agency. This debt is structured to be paid back in funds gathered through sales tax revenue in Puerto Rico, money that is also needed for basic services and also the financial restructuring and economic recovery of the island. As of now, Valpost owns two types of Bofina debt, $480 million in senior bonds and $451 million in subordinate bonds. The difference between senior bonds and subordinate bonds is that senior bonds must be paid back first. So, to provide the basic timeline of the events, the Papalos Group began purchasing Puerto Rican debt in 2015 under 10 shell companies named Decatur Holdings LLC under 10. Papalos did not make this known publicly, but in October 2017, investigative work performed by the Public Accountability Initiative and The Intercept, which you can find on pages 14 to 20 of the evidence packet, revealed that Papalos was in fact the owner of these shell companies. Carmen finally acknowledges and defended his investments, saying, expunging the debt would almost certainly eliminate any ability the Commonwealth would have to borrow money in the future at least Moritz, which would be critical to the island's rebuilding efforts. Before PROMESA was passed, Carmen donated about $2.9 million to different political candidates. To no coincidence, however, Carmen stopped donating just a month before Congress passed PROMESA, which favors creditors. PROMESA, for those who may not know, was law passed in 2016 to establish an advisory board in order to restructure Puerto Rican debt. On top of that, Valpost joined a Bofina coalition that brought together top lawyers and lobbyists to put together an aggressive campaign in order to extort profits from Puerto Rico. Our research first involved looking into Valpost investments at other peer institutions. What we found was that Harvard University was Valpost's biggest client, investing nearly $2 billion of its endowment. Harvard made these investments through a fund named HP Institutional LP, as reported in their tax filings. As 2 weeks, also 2 weeks ago, hundreds of protesters at Harvard University marched across campus to urge their university to divest from Valpost unless it canceled its Puerto Rican debt holdings. Needless to say, this issue matters to a lot of people. Seeing Harvard's tax filings encouraged us to take a look at our own and see if Cornell University had any investments of its own in Valpost. We initially did not find any disclosing of Cornell's investment partnerships. Also, the Office of the University Treasurer has stated that as of December 22, 2017, it is bound by confidentiality agreements with its investment managers that prevent Cornell from publicly disclosing a manager's investment strategy or investment holdings. And if you refer to pages 35 to 39 of the evidence packet to see Cornell's tax filings, in which disclosures are listed as a number of partnerships and are not named. My colleagues have found this lack of transparency concerning, especially because our peer institutions, Yale, Princeton, and Harvard, clearly list their partnerships and investments managed by Valpost. You may refer to pages 30 and 31 of the evidence packet to see how Princeton has clearly listed Valpost as one of its partners. Our research has made it clear that there is great need for transparency with Cornell's tax filings. Additionally, the administration should reconsider its investments and create fair investment policies in regards to its government debt. This issue is not only a growing concern for our community, but for many other organizations across the country. In fact, just a few months ago in October, a letter was sent to 18 university endowments from a coalition of different organizations. This letter can be found on page 27 of your evidence packet. This is an issue that deeply concerns me. The actions of BAPOS threaten the lives of millions of Puerto Ricans, and for Cornell to have BAPOS as a partner makes the university complicit in those actions. So I hope you all join me today in supporting our resolution. Thank you so much.
Okay, so today I'm obviously speaking in support of SA Resolution 28 mandated Cornell's commitment to economic justice in Puerto Rico and operational support. The operational transparency of its investments, this resolution, among other things, recommends that Cornell divest from any and all Puerto Rican debt obligations in line with what Cornell has investments in fund managed by the BAPOS. The BAPOS group was founded by Cornell graduates of Harmon several months ago. Investigations led by Intercept and CNBC found the BAPOS group have just under $1 billion worth of Burkina bonds before this mention. BAPOS Group purchased these bonds from a shell company, Decathlon Holdings, effectively shielding them from their transactions from public scrutiny. BAPOS Group has called for the Iron Man Act extreme austerity because it shows the pay of the debt to the BAPOS Group. I wish to make clear why this is such an egregious injustice. Creditors like the BAPOS Group are taking advantage of the bankruptcy proceeding that is only permissible because Puerto Rico is denied equality and treated as a colony of the United States. Currently, Puerto Rico is subject to a financial oversight board created by Congress in 2016 to the Puerto Rico Oversight and Management and Economic Stability Act. This law effectively stripped Puerto Rico of any form of self-governance, requiring that any action the Puerto Rican government takes be approved by the oversight board. Any action the oversight board tells Puerto Rico to take must be followed. Puerto Ricans were unable to voice themselves in the creation of CONES and had no means of objecting to the law that was forced upon them because they cannot vote and because they have no substantive representation in Congress. Puerto Rico is only subject to this oversight board bankruptcy process because in 1984, Congress passed several amendments to the bankruptcy code. One of which stripped Puerto Rico of its ability to authorize municipal debt relief under Chapter 9 of the code. These amendments make specific reference to the fact that Puerto Rico is an unincorporated territory. In the eyes of Congress, because Puerto Rico is an unincorporated territory, is not entitled to the same rights as a state has with respect to bankruptcy proceedings. So what is an unincorporated territory? The status comes from the unincorporated doctrine crafted by Justice Wright in the Insular Cases in 1901. After the U.S. seized Puerto Rico from Spain after the Spanish-American War, there were questions over the extent to which Puerto Rico deserved equal rights. Thus, we have the Insular Cases. The New York City collector of customs attempted to impose taxes on sugar imported from Puerto Rico. The Dominican Sugar Company sued, saying that the taxes are not constitutional because of uniform tax laws, which requires that all taxes and duties on imports throughout the United States be consistent. Eventually, the Supreme Court said that these taxes were in fact constitutional and that the Constitution did not fully and equally apply to Puerto Rico. Justice Wright, who helped to author the majority opinion, referred to Puerto Ricans as savages and uncivilized people who weren't ready for equality under the law and didn't deserve equal protection. He said that such people, the kind of uncivilized people that Puerto Ricans were not fully incorporated in the United States, but were instead unincorporated people, unincorporated territory, and thus not deserving equality from the Constitution. This unincorporated status, rooted in racism, is the sole reason the federal government is able to deny Puerto Rico equality under the law, under bankruptcy proceedings, and is the only reason why creditors like Seth Marmon can take advantage of the bankruptcy process to exploit Puerto Rico. Thus, when creditors like the BAPOS Group push for austerity measures, they are taking advantage of the fact that Puerto Rico is subject to an unequal bankruptcy proceeding. They are taking advantage of the fact that the colonial status of Puerto Rico, and the racism that undergoes the unincorporated status, produces status that allows the federal government to treat people like the same. This is irreconcilable with Cornell's commitment to economic and social justice. The callousness of many creditors towards the reality of Puerto Rico's crisis before and after Hurricanes Irma and Maria cannot be exaggerated. Consider, for example, the timing of the incorporation of the shell company used by Self Farm. The company was fully incorporated in August 2015, when at that time discussions in Congress made it clear that Puerto Rico would not be given the opportunity to restructure its debt, and would instead be subject to oversight. The investment in Puerto Rico was calculated and moved. Creditors like the BAPOS Group knew that Puerto Rico would not be able to pay its debt. The island itself has been in a recession for over 11 years, and has only seen increased poverty and unemployment since the beginning of the recession, and more Puerto Ricans leaving the island thousands each year. The BAPOS Group's purchase of nearly $1 billion of Puerto Rico's debt is not out of concerns for Puerto Rico's welfare. It was a calculated move seeking to take advantage of the fact that Puerto Rico will not be able to pay back its debt, cannot restructure its debt as unequal treatment, and instead sought to take advantage of a bankruptcy proceeding that only seeks to ensure that creditors are paid at any cost. The humanitarian consequences that accompany such ruthlessness and biases are irreconcilable with Cornell's commitment to economic and social justice. Creditors call for the oversight board to enact harsh austerity measures, calling for cuts to Puerto healthcare programs and the assistance in public education. These demands are made all while the island's membership of 52% poverty, 3 times the highest in any city in the country, and a 12% unemployment rate. These demands are made all while over a third of the population still does not have power after 5 months. 5 months, and there are still 1 million people without electricity. Thousands of Puerto Ricans remain food insecure and not access to clean water. When I went to Puerto Rico over spring, over winter break, my family built with areas affected by post-fire Hurricane Maria. Adults were crying over being given credit and water. With that, while thousands of Puerto Ricans remain in a vulnerable state, creditors are calling for Puerto Rico programs crucial to the island's ability to recover, let alone one day be a functioning economy. The actions of groups like the Balfour Group demonstrate a blatant disregard for the welfare of Puerto Rico. It is for the concern to economic and social justice. So it's for these reasons that Cornell must invest in any and all Puerto Rican debt obligations, not just those committed by the office. Cornell's commitment to economic and social justice cannot be matched with profiting off of debt holdings that only make it possible, because Puerto Rico is not giving people equality on their level. In closing, the last time I spoke to student assembly, we were discussing a resolution to allocate $10,000 to the Cornell University of Puerto Rico Fund. The student assembly graciously moved to donate the requested amount, and by doing so, it made a tangible difference in the lives of 62 students working with us today. The student assembly showed its commitment to Puerto Rico from the welfare of Puerto Ricans. And today, I hope you all do the same. Thank you.
All right, so Kristen, our role today, did an excellent job of kind of introducing the entire narrative and explaining the significance. I'd really like to get into what specifically the resolution does to improve upon this problem and what Cornell do to show their commitment to Puerto Rico. So I'm going to start by kind of walking through some things in the evidence packets that relate to the resolution, and I can kind of go into the significance of what this means in terms of the investment for the So to start out, I'd like to talk about the disclosure gap, which Rogel originally mentioned in his original speech. So essentially, Cornell has a lower standard of disclosure compared to some of its peer institutions like Harvard, Princeton, and Yale. So if you look at page 1 of the packet, Cornell's annual financial reports, you see about $1 billion of hedged equity and equity partnerships. So that type of thing would typically be disclosed on the Form 990 and the Form 990P. So if you're looking for this in the packet, you flip past all the news articles, and the first tax statement you'd see is Princeton University's Form 990. So this is just a cover page, but then the page after that cites in just a whole different list of various hedge fund equity partnerships, and one specifically is BPI LTD, which Mitch Clipper says was the address of Post's investment with Princeton. So that's how Princeton discloses it. And you mentioned earlier Harvard had this disclosed in its taxes as well, and we'll kind of get into that a little bit later. So kind of comparing this to Cornell. So the second thing is Cornell's 2015 Form 990 Schedule R Part 3. And for that, Cornell is disclosing a few Cornell owned entities and some various charitable trusts, but not really the same type of hedge funds and equity partnerships that you saw in the financial statements. And after the financial statements, there's a database, this is a financial database of various funds and a list of hedge funds. You really don't see those in tax statements. So that kind of begs to differ. So where are these partnerships listed and how does Cornell choose to disclose them? So the very last item in the packet is Cornell's 2015 Form 990T, which relates to the organization's primary unrelated business activity, which essentially is just short for investing activity. So this shows 206 different partnerships, which have an income loss of approximately $5 million, but it doesn't disclose what the partnerships are. So these are the various entities that Cornell's investing with, but it's not really disclosing what those are. So I think that's one of the things that needs to be addressed kind of to fit this whole picture into hold investments accountable. So in terms of how the administration structures its current policies in terms of disclosure, I reached out to the Division of Financial Affairs in the University Investments Office over break and got a response back from Joel Molina, December 22nd. He kind of explained through the policies, and it was great to hear back, and he was very clear on everything. So thanks, Joel, for getting back to me and all this and staying in contact. So some of the important policies here are this confidentiality agreement preventing Cornell from publicly disclosing the investment strategy of the holdings, and moreover, the partnerships on the Form 990T, they specifically said that these agreements prevent the university from disclosing more detailed information on the partnership that you referenced in the letter. So the endowment managers don't have to disclose this, and the confidentiality agreements are preventing this. So other universities have a higher standard of disclosure than mandate from the partners in their offices. So I feel like this is something that could be changed to improve disclosure and transparency. So kind of going into Puerto Rico, and what exactly do the debt purchased by funds fund BACOs and other hedge funds as well happen to Puerto Rican people? So there was a Reuters article on February 5th, 2018 that kind of put together an update on the finance in Puerto Rico. So right now, Puerto Rico has $120 billion in combined bond and pension debt obligations. Governor Carter Rosello actually submitted a draft turnaround plan on January 24th, which projected a $3.4 billion budgetary gap and would bar the island from paying any of its debt until 2022. So Puerto Rico's current circumstance already has a $3.4 billion budgetary gap with no debt being repaid right now. So that just gives you an idea of the devastation of the hurricane and the circumstances. In addition to that, the advisory board wanted a fund to grow to approximately $1.3 billion in the case of future natural disasters, which that would be up Puerto Rico's cash flows as well. So from a budgetary standpoint, Puerto Rico has already been forced into austerity because of the hurricane alone. So Seth Klarman's demands, which were made publicly, for the debt that purchased to be paid back a significant premium over what BACOs purchased the debt at on the open market, will further constrain Puerto Rico's ability to recover. So it's important to understand that the repayment here, due to the bankruptcy, it's not just simply a payback at par. This is a negotiated payback. So Larman's fund bought the debt on the market at some various different price points. Mainly his cheapest was 30 cents on the dollar. So this hedge fund is trying to negotiate a payback above 30 cents on the dollar. So anything that's coming from this negotiated payback comes out of Puerto Rico's cash flows. And if they have less cash flows, they're unable to rebuild the island, issue future securities, that type of thing. So it's important that Cornell and others are supporting negotiated payback that is very considerate to the hurricane and budgetary problems in Puerto Rico. So Klarman actually had a quote saying that in the case of Puerto Rico, expunging the debt would almost certainly eliminate any ability of the Commonwealth to borrow money at future reasonable rates, which would be critical to the island's rebuilding effort. So this is an important concern, and many people in the finance community on campus also kind of echoed some of these concerns for me. So kind of to respond to that statement, I would disagree with Mr. Klarman and some of the others, because so you're increasing the value of our paid back to investors. So this is likely only to his tranche of debt, because that's what he's invested in. And so after working with ratings agencies, it's key for the issuance of securities or anything else to be able to have the cash flows to pay for those additional securities and service the debt. So in an official statement, you can see a provision for additional bonds, and you would need the amount of revenue free to be able to service that debt, so principal and interest. Essentially, if all the debt is being paid back at a premium to Mr. Klarman, Bauhaus, and other hedge funds, then there is no cash flows to issue new securities. So this argument, while it does bring up a valid point, this is a bankruptcy, and this should be, the future cash flows to issue securities should be prioritized. So an important example in this case was actually written about in a Yale op-ed when some Yale students discovered they were invested in Alpaca. So in 2001, Argentina defaulted on $95 billion of debt in a depression in 2001. So you can see some similarities to the Puerto Rico situation. So it offered to pay back 30% of the debt on the dollar to all the investors, and 93% of the investors agreed to accept the deal. Of the 7% who did it, Bracebridge Capital, which the hedge fund which Yale was invested in, $1.3 billion as of June 30th, 2016. So because that hedge fund didn't accept the settlement, Argentina would have to declare bankruptcy and its credit would be totally destroyed. So all the other investors in the market were paid 30%. However, just the hedge fund was paid back at 75%, which gave Yale an 800% return at the expense of Argentina. So this kind of mirrors the Argentina situation in terms of looking at these investors where the hedge funds are clearly holding this country hostage in terms of bankruptcy and negotiated payback. So it's important that Cornell is advocating on behalf of Puerto Rico in this case, as Yale did it back in 2001, and Argentinians really paid the price for this. So kind of continuing on to what exactly does this resolution do to move forward on this issue. So the first clause relating to Cornell's commitment to economic justice and operational transparency. Cornell is a nonprofit institution with a mission to better the world through education and outreach. Allowing an investment partner to engage in a speculative activity with donated money is irresponsible, as the endowment doesn't allow Cornell to be investing in derivatives as just an asset category other than hedge something like an interest rate. So you shouldn't be speculating on debt of this sort as well, because financial aid and other important charitable things come out of our endowment. I think, one, on the part of the university, we shouldn't be doing these type of investments. And then on the Puerto Rican side, this is also indirectly harms the islands rebuilding efforts. So the second clause regarding a due diligence investigation about Cornell's holdings with the Bacos Group and to divest from any Puerto Rican debt obligations. So when Harvard went through all the papers, they found $60 million of Puerto Rican debt within their investment in Bacos. So this clause really encourages the Office of Investments to do that investigation into what exactly are in our hedge fund holdings with Bacos. I mean, we know that Cornell is invested, but due to the disclosure, we don't know what the specific amounts are. So I think regardless, we need to be holding our investment partners to a high standard and really investigating this issue. And this isn't just for one hedge fund. I mean, this is pretty much for all of our partners. We have 206 that is shown in the 2015 990T. So I think we should be holding all of our partners to a high standard. So Cornell should be investigating all of the partners for Puerto Rican debt and then divesting from that. I would like to make a distinction though, because kind of going back to the Yale op-ed example, we saw how the hedge funds were coercing Argentina into an excessive payback compared to the other investors. I think the office does have to act with discretion and act smartly in this case. So in terms of Bacos, because they're actively trying to get a higher payback, which would be damaging the rebuilding efforts of Puerto Rico, that's something that the office should be actively trying to divest from. But if Cornell is invested in a diversified debt fund or something like passively managed, that's not really one engaging in political activities, not really corresponding, but merely holding in investments in a diversified, safe way, you kind of expect other charitable trusts. I mean, that's fine. So the distinction really is kind of tracing the money and the influence and how it affects the Puerto Rican people. So, I mean, we're just students here, so we're trying to kind of bring forward prudent recommendations. So I think after reading the whole resolution, the spirit of the investigation is really reflected in everything we've said. So moving on through the clauses, the Office of University Investment should really move forward to creating a new policy preventing affiliated investment partnerships from coercing repayment on government debt above market terms. So kind of reflecting kind of the Yale situation, we definitely need a policy with the endowment to prevent our partners from like lobbying entities to pay us back more, because that's just not contributing to Cornell's mission. Given the change of staff in the Office of University Investments and the new Chief Investment Officer, Kenneth Miranda, and we've seen a recent change in leadership, and I think new refreshing policies would be much appreciated just to get more stable returns in the endowment as well as to better fulfill Cornell's mission. So the last clause here relates to disclosure. Cornell needs to increase its standard of disclosure and transparency. I think it's good for both the entities being invested in as well as alumni and donors, because transparency helps build trust with the institution, and I think it's very important in terms of moving the university forward. So that's definitely kind of me walking through the resolution. So I'd just like to once again thank everyone for letting us going to take the time to explain all this. It's a little bit complicated when looking at it first, but it definitely makes sense when going through about everything in totality. I definitely appreciate the actions Cornell and the Assembly both took to support Puerto Rico last fall, and I definitely hope that the administration and students can work together to build a better investment framework that better serves the university and students and the rest of the world.
And thank you so much. Again, you guys, we do have a couple of questions, but before we start with the student survey members, let's find the community members that if you guys have any comments, questions, or anything, you guys can just raise your hand and we'll find them. First is Rue. So I really want to thank you guys for coming out with this resolution today. It looks like you put a ton of effort into this and a ton of research, which I really appreciate, especially with all the financial statements, all the data that you did. There's a lot of work that goes into that. In terms of the actual resolution, I can confidently say that I'm really happy about the lines 42 and 43 about conducting a due diligence investigation into our holdings as a university, as well as 52 through 54 about being more open with our investments. Hopefully I support of that. One of the questions that I do have is where the outpost itself has signed out the door when it comes to being an investor. What essentially happens if Cornell divests from the outpost, and say they divest, then wouldn't someone else just come back in and request the same thing? That's the first question. And then the second thing is, do you find an opportunity here, or do you find it necessary to essentially lobby Congress or put in efforts more towards the federal policies, because that seems to be what's really impacting people.
Right, absolutely. Thank you. There are some great concerns. So firstly, I think I'll address the question of what happens to debt once it's divested, namely if divesting from our borrowers and specifically Puerto Rican debt. So essentially this hedge fund is managing other people's money. So the client, Cornell, would come to the hedge fund and say, okay, we don't want to be holding these Puerto Rican funds anymore. So BAPOs, because it's not their money, it's other people's money. So that debt would be sold and it would go back in the open market. Potentially, I mean, hedge funds have a lot of inner workings. I mean, potentially another client of the hedge fund would take it. It definitely wouldn't be Harvard or any of the other universities because students are making a stand. So, I mean, it's very hard to say what the hedge fund would do specifically. Potentially, the debt will go back in the open market and get scooped up by a large institutional investor like BlackRock or something like that. But I think the important thing here is that Cornell is not alone. Students at Harvard address this, students at Yale, students at Princeton, so all over the Ivy League, students are addressing this, other universities as well. And Harvard is the hedge fund's biggest client. So when all of these clients are lining up saying, we don't want to invest in this, it sends a very strong statement that the fund needs to change its practices. And institutional investors, hedge funds, they are listening to investors. BlackRock has just changed a lot of policies, forcing companies to be putting women as directors on the board. So I think the voices of investors are heard, and it's important to actually be making these requests and holding our partners accountable. And then can you repeat your second question?
Yeah, so the second question was about efforts to lobby Congress and change federal policy.
Right, so this is definitely a period of the university level first. Organizations like Roosevelt and National Congress have kind of more established headquarters and full-time lobbyists and are kind of working on pushing things like that. I think definitely more federal outreach can be made on our behalf and other universities, but I definitely think that this is the place to start. And once this keeps building up, there will be more federal attention. But I mean, nothing really just shows that the federal government, you have to start small on both consensus in order to make change go forward.
Okay, and so just a quick follow-up. I think you really hit the point on why it matters that we do this as an institution, like as Cornell. That sort of brings me to this idea of like creating a concerted effort across universities to really impact the institutions that we are invested in. And so has there been any concerted effort And is that sort of what Catch Clippers is doing, or do you mean, like,
so, yeah, absolutely. So I can definitely speak more on that. So Edge Clippers is a research institution that has a lot of specialists who look into how hedge funds work and how things in the market. And then Roosevelt Institute has a national headquarters as well as chapters at like all the universities, like Columbia, Harvard, etc. And so the chapters have been kind of working on this and helping coordinate the effort on the ground. And Edge Clippers is providing some of the research. So that's kind of part of this I've been involved in. And if you take a look at the endowment letter that was sent to our president in October, there were, I believe, over 20 organizations who signed on to that. So there are a bunch of other great organizations who are working on this as well. And you can find this kind of in the middle of the evidence packet in the letter.
Next is Joe. First of all, I really wanted to mention Chris, who is quite literally the leader of why so much advocacy on this campus is happening in regards to Puerto Rico. You have been truly one of the most inspiring leaders that this campus has seen in a long time. I want to recognize you especially. This is not pushing on YouTube, but can we move Chris's name to the top of the respectfully submitted? Just because it's symbolic. Can we do that? Okay. Motion to amend and move Chris's name. Okay, we got it. Thank you. Thank you.
So if anyone has any other side for that?
Okay, that's okay. Again, this is just absolutely fantastic. And kind of this is to be the start of what universities did during our friends in Africa. This could be that, and I strongly support it. I know all of this assembly most likely supports it. I can't read the all minds, but I would hope so. Yeah, great resolution, fantastic research, love it so much. Great job.
Okay, thank you. Next is TJ. Hey, so I just want to say thank you to all three of you, as well as like the work that you mentioned she's been as well into this. Like it's very clear that you put a lot of thought into this, and I think we all really appreciate that, and I hope that the administration appreciate that as well. So just want to get that back up there. So I have two questions for you all, and one question more for Zach. Questions for you. The three of you are, are there any ways, outside of Cornell, like opening up and giving full transparency on their investments, are there any ways, like in terms of looking at open market data, to like know if Cornell is actually divested from these different bonds, or like from, different investments that hold these bonds? So that's my first question. Is there any way we could actually check in on Cornell besides any other currency issues? And then the second question is, I noticed there's a letter from October that was sent to North Carolina. I'm just curious if Hedge Clippers ever heard that, you know, if Hedge Clippers heard that on that letter, on my response. And then the third question I'll ask about.
So starting with the letter, I don't recall hearing any formal response, and the staff rep and contact with Hedge Clippers hasn't mentioned anything, so I assume not. Hopefully after this discussion, a formal response would definitely be appreciated. And then your question about regarding the due diligence investigation and the result of that investment. So I mean, Cornell's confidentiality policy was written in the resolution. So I assume even with more changes in disclosure and writing down the investments, I don't think like students will ever be given publicly kind of literally the specific holdings of what's in the hedge fund. I mean, that's just not how strategy would work. But I mean, given that Cornell is a nonprofit and is committed to IPOs, and if these administrators are interested in actually pushing change here. So the president, the CIO, Kenneth Miranda, directed staff into the investigation, and sure, I requested a paper from BALCO. So, I mean, we are working with the administration on this. So, I mean, it does require a certain level of trust. And I mean, these people who manage our money and run the university, and they're doing quite a good job of it. So I have full faith universities are approaching this in a similar manner. I think this is definitely the best step we can take as students to move forward.
Mrs. Dale?
Can I answer? Finish up the question.
Yes, all up?
It was more for exact, and it didn't want to address it to them.
Oh, gosh.
So, I know in the past, the SAS passed resolutions regarding university investments, particularly I'm going to bring this up because it's relevant to how we structure this resolution, if you know the amendments. But now we passed resolutions asking the university to disclose or divest from sustainable or non-sustainable forms of energy, like that kind of thing. And also, I know there's a different process for crisis investments. So I'm just curious what response from the ministry has been in the past, if there's anything additional that we might want to include in this resolution so that we get a substantial response from the university.
Wait, can you repeat what was the last part?
Basically, what was it? The conflict-free investments resolution last year, there's a different process for that, but I know in terms of the sustainable investments resolution for the new year, have you guys responded from the administration on this? And are there any changes that we've made to this issue?
Yes, so I can actually pull up a response that I got from Mr. Paula regarding one of the sustainable investments resolutions that we passed. I don't have the exact job right now to find it, but from my memory, it was basically that it was well noted, but it couldn't be implemented. Yeah, and then I think that the fact of the matter is all of our resolutions are recommendations, and it's up to them, to present all the board of trustees to take it on or not, right? But let me find the exact response to you. Okay.
Gina, quick question. Do you have any institutional knowledge regarding the impact of resolutions that were passed in the past regarding divestment?
Regarding the community input on divestment from fossil fuels, because there was community-wide input and all of the constituent assemblies raised it through resolutions, it actually went to the Board of Trustees, who debated it and considered it. And they made some amendments to their policies. They did not divest, but they did make some amendments to their policies. And that was a direct result of the community input on that issue.
And just a quick follow-up. So it sounds like in order to get a resolution to the Board of Trustees, we need every constituent assembly to pass it. What is the?
No, that's not necessary. It amplifies the issue. And created a lot more, it became a whole, it was harder to
ignore.
Well, not necessarily ignore, because I think the trustees are certainly interested in what the constituencies are doing, but this became then a very amplified community-wide issue. It just was that much more important.
Regarding the disclosure part of the resolution, I think this is an update for you guys. I pulled up the response from Mr. Pollack regarding Resolution 14, which was increasing the transparency of the our support analysis partnership with Qatar's campus. So for that, she also says important this issue very seriously, but then the confidentiality agreements she was unable to. So especially in regards to investments and hedge funds and things like that, there may, I don't know about those specifically, but there may be some the confidentiality agreements that might prevent them from disclosing some things as well, just as a heads up. Okay, next is Chris. You have what?
Oh, that was the answer. So I just want to start by saying that this may be the best presented resolution we've seen in the past 2 years. So good job on that. And I did have one quick question. If you said you spoke to Joel Molina, did he give any indication about how the university would respond to the resolution? If not,
The Office of the University Treasurer kind of compiled a response, and he kind of gave me the response and then was in contact with me about general questions and things like that. I tried to put in a FOIA information request to see, because it's we're a nonprofit and Puerto Rican debt's a public investment, to see if we could get any more information on that. That's kind of to be continued. They did express some interest in potentially getting a meeting next week. I encouraged them to send some type of spokesperson or a member of the investment team or division of financial affairs today, but the notice was a little short based on the agenda. Hopefully next week we can get someone in and definitely continue this discussion. But I've been in contact with them, and they've been very good about that. The time was a little short this week, but we can get it addressed soon.
Chris?
Thank you so much for all the effort you put into this. This is the most impressive resolution I've seen in my time in this assembly. I just have two questions, I guess, that are logistical, but you know, especially for the point that TJ raised. Even when the university has made an express commitment to like a social issue, like environmental change, and it's like building a bunch of projects on campus, they still have not divested from the investments to go against that cause. Even when like, the entire voice of campus was raised and supported that issue. So, I mean, one thing I found working on a much smaller issues on campus that really is a sustained effort to press reconstruction to the community. So, definitely set up structures that continuously discuss this issue. With the administration, make sure you keep in touch with them. And then you just, this is not like a one-time hire, this is really a five that needs to come. And then on a second note, have you guys coordinated with the student efforts on other campuses? Because to me, it seems that the optimal outcome here is that all of the businesses that are at least to a certain extent, the hope is that that would really send a message to make a tangible impact on the ground for the university. How are you coordinating in your efforts with other universities and student efforts?
Exactly. So I'm involved in an organization called Ivy Council that encompasses all the IVs, and we have an opportunity to meet every semester at one IV. This semester, this conference will be hosted at Cornell. So we're still planning that conference right now. There will be conversations had about how we can increase these outreach efforts and sort of get other IVs involved with this as well. And there will be more updates on that coming soon.
Yeah. So next, Siobhan.
Can I make a quick comment?
Yes. Sure.
I think Chris raised a good point. There's an awful lot of information, administrative response to the last effort that was made for divestment that you might find useful. So all of that information is available on the website. It would be affiliated with some of the resolutions, but you should give us a search. If you can't, please let us know. But There is a lot of information there.
Thank you. Mr. Shabar?
So first, I think let's just acknowledge that this is as much about imperialism and neocolonialism as it is a financial decision. Okay. Second, okay, so now there is precedent for student activists making or receiving relationships with companies, so most notably Nike, because of their sweatshop labor, in which the athletic contract was ended last July, and also Jackson's United in 2015 succeeded in getting the Johnson Museum to terminate its contracting with prison company G4S USA Secure Solutions, which is benefiting from modifying black lives by the prison industrial complex. And so investing in the Balcos group means that Cornell is participating in that very commodification of Puerto Rican lives. And so all the while seeming to be benevolent as it opens its doors to Puerto Rican students from the University of Puerto Rico. And so I think that we cannot participate in this treatment of Puerto Rico as a U.S. colony. And one of the major ways we can do that is by endorsing this resolution. So I don't have a vote on this body, but I hope you won't think about that as well.
Thank you, Shimon. This is Shashura.
I have two questions. First of all, I want to thank all three of you for all the hard work you've done on this report. It's really one of the most amazing things I've ever done. So I was just wondering what we can do as an SA, once we pass this resolution, and as representatives of the students, what we can do to kind of help further your cause on campus, you know, while working with the students.
So a couple of us are going to address this. So from an assembly perspective, I think reaching out to like organizations on byline funding who were kind of involved with the assembly that way, constituent assemblies, getting more assemblies to examine this issue and consider passing this resolution or a similar one. Chris also has some great ideas as well.
Yeah, so just since, well, before we continue, the association is about 30 people, and we have the 60 PR students. A lot of our energy and time is already spent. Primary returns, also, obviously, this is a very efforts. So we will all, and a very helpful work will enter with us throughout the rest of the semester to keep pressure on the university and also just support our community efforts. It's really helpful for this. Last semester, our community was only being successful with a lot of student organizations that help us out with this. We have some time, but it's also kind of hard, obviously, hard for the students. Yeah, it's just, I'm going to be really happy to help us with that. And also, like, when the PRC reaches out, as soon as I make sure that you draw a response, just help us as we go around and help us keep doing your question. Is there a second question?
Yeah, so my second question is for the exec board. So once this resolution passes, I know, like, one of the priorities is getting it to the top as fast as possible. So we work with Dustin at all of this. We think that's possible. Like, to just get it to the attention of the board of trustees. So, like, I don't know how it works.
Oh, I see. I mean, I could request that this. I mean, I can do this better than that. Because they don't please. Maybe this also the board of trustees, also with the recommendation. You could also ask Dustin to.
And it might be beneficial to go through other assemblies as well, just based on what Gina was saying. We can try those methods first if that doesn't work, and we can also do it that way. Whatever is the most suitable.
Yeah, just two quick things, just kind of on logistics. So, first of all, even though a lot of people are very passionate about this, I just kind of want to make it clear that I don't think we don't need to pass this in this meeting. It should come back in the next meeting, this whole business, because one, it gives people more time to look at the resolution, and two, I'd really like to see someone from the Office of Investments, Financial Affairs come and talk. I think that would be super valuable for the discussion, so not pass this this week. And then secondly, I think we should definitely kind of get some of our community members in this discussion as well.
Actually, that's a great point. I'm gonna, after this meeting, I'll actually send an email to Joel Molina, whoever, maybe the provost, and ask representatives to come from the administration to talk on this for next week. I think that'd be more appropriate. And then, so yeah, what? Yeah, so yeah, once again, for any community members at any time, please raise your hands. I'll recognize you guys. So, if you have comments or questions, okay. Yeah, just come to the mic.
Hi, my name's Mark. First off, I just want to thank Zach and the rest of the team for putting this together. I think it's an amazing initiative. But one of the things that I was thinking while I was hearing it was, to what extent can we investigate what else, like endowment holdings, such as like an outpost group, like why does it have to just stop in Puerto Rico, for example? Like, nobody's safe in the hurricanes. So what about like another potential governments that they're like they might have debt invested in, or just any ethical investment in general? Would you be able to investigate that as well?
That's Dave.
Yeah, so I actually wanted to echo what Dale said. I think this is probably one of the most well-researched and best-written resolutions that I've seen.
So congratulations on that. I'm going to vote for it, obviously. But one of the things that I think is important to think about while we frame this conversation is, like, we don't know how much we have invested in the host group. And, like, it could turn out that it's a lot of our endowment. I mean, the maximum it can be is, like, you know, a couple, it can't be like more than $1 billion because that's all the money we have invested in hedge funds, so it's much less than that. But it could be a substantial amount of money. And if we were to invest in something else instead of Falpos, which normally gets like a higher rate of return than the average broker now, then, you know, we could actually see like a significant impact on our annual operating budget in like the terms of like millions of dollars that would just kind of like go away. So that's something to think about, and while in my opinion is like that doesn't outweigh the, you know, the costs of you know, the immorality that is the immorality of investing in this, I still think that it's important to think that like there are real costs in terms of like financial aid and other programs that students want that like will not happen if we invest in something that has like a lower rate of return.
Yeah, so just to kind of put that in perspective a little bit. So in terms of size of investment, so Harvard is Bakwa's biggest client. They have just a huge amount of money in it. But the actual position on Puerto Rican debt that Harvard had was $40 million. So given scale, size, and the differences in our endowment, I mean, this is like completely a shot in the dark, but I assume like the number would be somewhere between 1 and 10 million, depending on how the fund was structured. So in terms like compared to fossil fuel divestment and other things, so this move would be relatively smaller compared to some of the other things people have asked to divest from. So I think one, it's very achievable. So I think it can be done very quickly and expeditiously. And two, just the way Cornell structures its disclosure, structures how it does its investment policies, it's absolutely huge. And then moving forward, because Puerto Rico isn't the only time we've seen this. I mean, I brought up the Yale Grace Bridge example a couple of times. This happens very commonly with just territories, countries outside of the U.S. that have lower credit ratings or are having troubles with their cash flow. So it's absolutely essential that Cornell is following its mission and investing very prudently for itself, but also in consideration to these other territories. So I definitely think this can be done. There won't be much effect on the endowment at all. And I think changing our policies in the long term definitely will have a tangible effect and encourage other investment partners, and even those that aren't universities or nonprofit, like private sector institutions, insurance companies, holding investments, they're definitely going to see this and make some considerations and potentially be making requests as a client too. So I think it's definitely huge to start raising awareness on this issue right here.
Yeah, so just a quick response to that. You know, if you look at page one of the, if you like flip your little big packet and go to page one and you look at the bottom, it says that the typical investment size for Cornell is like $20 million in the hedge funds. So if it's just average, like if this is just the average hedge fund that we invest in, then and we take 10% of that, which is like, you know, an average rate of return for Cornell, then we'd be like losing $2 million a year, like our operating budget. And so I would argue it's probably more than $20 million because Klarman just donated a building to Cornell and we have like a long-standing relationship with him. So like, unless this is like a much smaller than average investment, which it probably isn't, then, you know, we're talking like $2-4 million here.
Right, so, I mean, we don't know how much the amount is, but I mean, Bakwa's is, it is relatively diversified hedge fund. They have a lot of public equities and other things like that. I mean, like, there's just no way to know, like, what the investment preferences of the university are, how all the different funds within the hedge fund are allocated to this investment. So I think that's definitely something we're going to need to hear back, see how feasible it is, see the results of the due diligence investigation. I think that's why this resolution is important, to kind of get to that next step and assessing what exactly is going on. Harvard had a bit of a jump because they were able to get a jump on this because they were able to see like a little bit more specifically what the size of the investments are. But I'm very confident we can kind of move forward on this issue.
Thank you, Rob. And welcome. Thanks. How's it going? I'm slightly over caffeinated right now, so I might be shaking a little bit. But I guess I would even ask for your support from the community. I wanted to come and express my full support for this resolution. And one of the things that I think is so important about this resolution is it's taking what is considered a political issue right now in the United States, in Congress, with the president, with the courts, considered a political issue and turning it into a moral issue. Because this is a humanitarian crisis right now. The way that the United States is treated Puerto Rico, the lack of awareness about Puerto Rico. So I'm in full support of this measure. And I also think, in the law school, I've studied bankruptcy. I'm not necessarily an expert, but I've studied extensively and worked under bankruptcy judges past time. And thinking about how the United States treats Puerto Rico through its bankruptcy processes, as Chris talked about, through Progressive. So typically when you have a business or even a sovereign state or like Detroit, when they basically restructured their debt a few years ago, that city or that state usually has control over their bankruptcy processes. And that's important because it allows a city or a state or a business to be able to allocate its funding, allocate its cash flow, whatever it needs to do, allocate it in a proper way that takes into account, yeah, its creditors, but also takes into account its constituents. And I think that's one of the things that's most harmful for MESA, and just another extension of how the United States colonial treatment of Puerto Rico continues to adversely affect the island. I'm in full support in response to, I guess that shifted gears a little bit, in response to kind of the nitty-gritty process across the university. I think to people that are involved in finance with this university, it comes as a surprise that it's not like we're making a ton of money on our endowment anyway. We've struggled with our investments over the past few years. So even if this is a large investment, I think it's open to question things that we invested, even from a financial standpoint, even beyond the post. So thank you. I appreciate it. Thanks for coming, John.
Thank you, Rob.
Next, we can have a word.
I think I want to echo Joe, just like shouting out to Chris. I've been working with him last semester, and just like the amount of work that he puts in. And I think just like on the issue of this resolution, I love that like Cornell on one hand will invite these students to stay for a semester for free, push them on their PR, and push them to the news, but then with the other hand, they'll like establish them back, like hopefully through the hypocrisy and investing in their debt obligations, and continuing America's like economic oppression and globalism. Now, I'm so excited for us to support this resolution. I've seen the way that Puerto Rican students have presented in support of all issues of religion, Puerto Rico, Palestine, recognizing the connection of all institutions of injustice like this. And I think, it's the blight on our campus that Cornell is contributing to this. I'm so excited for us to support it, and I hope that next week when we vote, all my fellow students will be supportive of it.
All right, thank you. With that, we will be closing discussion with this. Thank you guys so much. What?
On the audio. Yeah.
Hi, my name is Natalia, I'm a community member. I just wanted to voice my support for the resolution. I feel like on a bigger level, like this is just going to start transparency with Cornell because that's a really big issue on this campus. People don't know where the money they're giving is coming from, especially the Puerto Rican students that are here, when a part of their funding comes from this man who is not helping their island at all. So I think that this, like on a very basic level, ethical level, is important.
All right, thank you. Yeah, so it's regarding next steps. This resolution will automatically be part of business of the day next week. Hopefully, we will have a write a letter from an administrator that people can come and talk and ask questions. But once again, I would echo with us, this was a very, very well written report, but very well researched. And thank you guys so much for all of this. Can I get a formal motion to the table for all right, all in favor? Okay, it's clear. We have a majority of it. Alright, so it's not on the agenda, but I'm gonna have everyone spend maybe 1 or 2 minutes reviewing the minutes. on the agenda for the past meetings. So 1 minute. All right, can you just make that as consent? All right, perfect. It's the minutes have been approved. Thank you guys. Next, we'll go to last month's reports. So we have quite a lot, actually. So who is our liaison for the GPSA?
Dale.
Oh, okay. Actually, so we have another list that I'll go through first. So we're going to just.
All right, so first thing we're going to do is we're going to do committee reports. All right, we're going to start with committee reports. So that means that if you are a member of a certain committee, that's within our documentation, you should be able to talk about what you've been doing within that committee. So, or what the committee's been doing as well. So executive committee, I think we can skip executive committee. We'll go to dining committee. So Osai and Renee, if you guys could, each if one of you could touch on what's happening in dining room.
Ready to go.
Thank you.
Okay, so we're having
our first meeting of the semester on Tuesday, and we kind of focus group committee, basically like telling us. Basically, we told the first person in the group focus group who was working with the university what we wanted in terms of guiding long term for the next couple of years, because the university is currently creating a master plan for expanding housing on our campus. And so that obviously means the guiding has been rearranged to accommodate the initial people. And there was also some suggestions made, such as late night guiding hours for those people who want it, like chilling, serving dinner, also for people who want that as well. And I'm personally in favor of the late night guiding hours, because it would be very convenient to have people, especially freshmen who are like up at midnight, obviously limited hours to be able to go to RCC, work out, and get something to eat.
Okay, also, Renee, do you have anything to add? Sorry? Agreed. All right, so health and wellness committee, Dara is up here. So, in a minute, can you please touch on
that? I only go to diversity.
You only go to diversity? Okay. Well, I mean, just the list. Olivia.
I don't believe I've met this in the last week. I don't know if you can hear me. We haven't met this in the what?
Health and wellness.
Health and wellness. We haven't met this in the last year, or I haven't had any room or something, but basically, last semester, we were doing tobacco or burning. And basically,
So Shrita, have you environmental policy and planning, TJ?
first meeting of the semester was last week, which I wasn't here for this one.
Closer to your mouth.
Oh, okay. Yes, the first meeting of the semester was last week at 7:30. At 7. Wasn't available because this one's a lot. But basically, what we've been working out for the past semester is there's like three main initiatives that our department is focused on. So it's a water bottle initiative to kind of keep track of like how many plastic water bottles people use on campus, to make a shift away from that towards plastic or towards reusable water bottles. And use the money sold, or use the tax on the water bottle sold to like go towards putting in more take back the tax kind of things. And there's also the lights off initiative, which is something that we're trying to bring back this semester, which is essentially like going around the different academic buildings at night and really turning off the lights because there's a lot of buildings where it's like unnecessarily left on. So this is something we're going to try to partner with APDR. And then the last thing is environmental community trying to partner with orientation steering committee and have more like sustainable program in orientation.
Okay, so I have a quick question and then Dave has a question.
Yeah.
In regards to take back the tap, have you been working with take back
it's,
the tap?
It's not like take back the tap. It's like a single project. It's essentially this is kind of an initiative that I have been focused on. I'm more focused on lights off, but it's essentially they want to tax they want to tax the sale of plastic bottles on campus and then take the tax from that and then use it to subsidize the cost of reusable water bottles from that store. I believe is what they're trying to do.
Okay. I guess
I would like to summarize that poorly. Like, that's the essence of it, is to reduce the use of plastic water bottles.
Okay. I'll just email it. And Dave.
Also, he was here like 10 minutes ago.
Yeah.
Not working.
So I haven't been planning on passing water bottles. I can find a new water bottle, but like, you don't actually have any
So,
So TJ, before like you take this as like a personal thing, I think it's very important that we realize that the reason we're doing this is because you are like the people that are speaking today are the bridges between the assembly and the committees. And so even though like within was the chair, he's obviously not here, sure, he's obviously not a part of these discussions regularly, but hopefully you can take back the messages that you're having to the respective today.
Sure. And I just wanted to add kind of in agreement and counter that if you have a very detailed reason that you object to something the committee is doing or something you really want to support, it's probably best to go to the committee meeting and reject to the chair, not to try to get all this information from one of the only assembly members of the committee. You're also welcome, if you see that one of these committees doesn't have a lot of assembly members, please join it. You're welcome to join pretty much every assembly committee that has no cap membership.
Okay, CMO, unfortunately, we do not have cap members.
Can I just clarify? I'm not. Let me just like clarify means the tax on plastic water bottles. So if you're going to use a reusable water bottle, that like doesn't affect you.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. It's just like that.
Okay. So we're moving on to CLO. Unfortunately, we don't have any SA members on that committee. So hopefully, if someone's interested, and can vocalize that now or after the meeting, or shoot down email. We'll move on to academic policy. So Chris, Evan, or Kosai. So Chris, do you want to talk about it?
I'm able to go to the meeting. It's conflicted with the ISU general body, which is a top priority. I'll be at the meeting this weekend. I know some of the things we discussed from last semester that was still on the table are redoing like means that are shown on transcripts. Another thing is making the exemption so that for finals, and putting that in as an official policy. So right now, basically, for 25 and 24 hours, it's a recommendation to professors to move along with them. They don't have to, so we want to formalize that. And then what else? I know there's like one or two other issues, but I'll update them.
So, the academic policy committee is currently developing a survey
measuring like student attitudes towards student centered individual. And I'm very passionate about this because one of the things I can get on is just trying to fix student center, which in my opinion is not awful. And so like we're trying to like see what students think about it and how students perceive the payroll process, student center, things like that. And that will probably be sent out either before or during the break. And based on the results, we want to propose something that we propose to you in a few minutes.
Okay, thank you. And then Evan? Academic policy? Okay, cool. Mark, Myra, Chris, and Marcos.
So, yeah. So, Spark is meeting tomorrow at 2:30, obviously, financially. Y'all are welcome to come. We're not voting on anything that we can't disclose. And so, I can't read my own writing. Hold on. We're discussing, continuing the discussion about getting on filelines so that we can continue to grow our endowment. And I'm going to talk to Dean about it very soon to put that in writing and make sure that we don't have to petition to get that on. We're also discussing the potential of using some of the endowment funds to create a sort of third grant support, which would essentially grant short-term loans to low-income students so that they'd be able to afford to pay the down payment on an apartment on campus. And looking at what that would look like, there's a lot of just practicality issues and like implementation issues that we haven't yet gone over in detail, but we're working with someone in the office financially to see how potentially we can make that a reality. And so the Summer Experience Grant is also going live in about a month. So we need some help PRing that, making sure that we see hopefully an increase in applications this semester as well. And yeah.
Marco, you got anything? That's gone. Yeah.
Yeah, so APSCOM has been going through kind of like what happened with bylines last semester, kind of like if, you know, your best practices, how you want to change some things. We didn't meet this past week because we didn't have anything to do, but this upcoming week we're going to be reviewing two special projects requests and continuing to look at Appendix B. And then maybe also looking at Appendix A, which is like the procedures for applying for bylines funding. So look out for fun stuff like that.
Are you able to talk about this?
Slope Day is happening this year.
Yay! That's the only reason I go to Cornell.
Oh yeah, so Slope Day, like they wanted like $20,000, but they're not going to get $20,000. So
we don't have money.
So yeah, I was gonna say this one needed liaison reports for something. But so we have a liaison, but they're not actually recognized, so they can't actually attend meetings anymore because they missed too many. But they've already made the selection one. They want $20,000, $10,000 was for water bottles, which for now Ryan covered in the past because they had enough money to, but this year they don't, so they're not gonna pay now. $1,000. I don't think it's like I know if they asked for money last year, I think $20,000 is unreasonable. I think $10,000 is more reasonable. I'm not putting ASCOM, I'm putting those thankos ASCOM here, not funding them enough because now we can fund them over. But I think we're going to need to fund them enough for $10,000.
Yeah, we don't have the money. So just for like people, like new members of the assembly, recognize like if people want to take a moral stance to like defund the assembly and people come to us with requests for money, then unfortunately we don't have money. So
They already booked the artist, so they might just like run out of money and then. They're going to run away. And they have this club. They pay for everything. They need to pay for more bottles. And there's no way, unless someone from like maybe the gang committee can coerce the like now dying to pay.
Okay. So if you, since it sounds like you've been like a primary contact, even though it's informal, I would request that perhaps you reach out to Audra or whoever's now in charge of Slope Day. Okay, awesome. So that she can come to the assembly and emphasize these requests, and so that she can understand that we are under the constraints as well.
I told her to reach out to me because when she said 12,000, I was like, that's a
good one. That's included.
Can we appoint you to be like the liaison to the Slope Day Programming Board and then fire you the day before so you can drink?
I mean, I can fire last year. I wasn't sorry. But I can go to the meeting. I don't know how long I'm going to be there because I'll ask for the next meeting to see if I can attend.
We can appoint you. Like it doesn't matter if you're welcome.
I can talk to Asha. Like I can friends with all of
us. Okay.
Thank you very much.
So to clarify, I'm simply the liaison. Dave contacted Shaygelski about the committee. He's like, hey, like add this person to communications in October. I have emails. I asked like multiple times like. Exactly. Hey, I would get up at the committee. I was like, what the forum? And they're like, oh, it's a talk to Dave. We're talking to Dave to meet like, in October. So at which point, when I was like added to the service, the added officer in October, Billy had one woman left. So I was not able to go to that one meeting. And also, I was not actually added to the server until last week when I called up with Shay. And he was like, oh, I sent all these emails. I was like, cool, I didn't get to meet them. Just to clarify that aspect, like the only one meeting left for the semester, like they know that I'm not. So I was only informed about one meeting because I was not looking to serve. And so this semester is going to be every week on Thursdays at 4:30. That's why I was late. That's where I was late. They put me in the G body. I talked to them because I was not aware of the point of this position to think about an issue that like I'm supposed to be in contact. This making the work focus.
So this upcoming name, like I guess like exactly will ensure that there's proper communications with like liaison contacts from other organizations. Okay. Infrastructure Fund Commission, Ian.
So let's just show kind of like what we came up for like office plan. Just got back with me and I'm meeting for tomorrow, so crosswalk, it's like people have submitted that to us before this project, but you were submitted that back to us as more or less.
ComCom, I guess I'll talk about that, or Savannah, do you want to talk about ComCom?
I love it.
We have a beautiful website, thanks to Jay Ward. Oh, and this Sunday we are putting the head of the committees to take photos from 3 to 4 p.m. That's at Sydney. I'm taking photos to Sean. And then we're working on like a standing banner.
We send them out. And so just to emphasize that, if anyone's pictures aren't on the website, I think, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, if you want those pictures too. Jaylon, do you have anything to talk about on the website?
So I think by now, like, I've added most people to the website, so like, you should be able to log in if you sign up. I last checked like 2 days ago, and then I sent an email if I added to the website. So if you do that, you should be able to log into the member resources page. And if you can't, like, just email me and let me know, and I'll add it to the system. And I'm not sure where we are on the like dedicating like liaison to like each of the communities to like, make sure that.
Yeah, also, that's being worked on.
So, okay. Yeah.
So, in regards to that, if you are the chair of the committee, there's likely going to be a ComCom member that reaches out to you so that we can publish what's actually happening in these committees to the public as well as to representatives that are here today, so we don't have to do these reports like in depth as much. So, in addition to that, we're also building on Sunday part of the meeting. For the committee chairs is to build a list of community resources. And so the list of community resources is everything from financial resources to like financial aid to mental health resources to reporting resources for sexual assault or anything like that. And so if you see anything where an individual member of the community or a member of the assembly can benefit from something, just send it my way, and I'll probably share this Excel file with the rest of the Excel as well. So,
yeah, so just to touch on that, the meeting this Sunday for staff of the committee, if you're chair of the committee, if you're on the exec board of the assembly, you're on staff of the committee, it's going to start at 3 p.m. Assembly. Savannah will be taking pictures of all the committee chairs, and any SA members who don't have pictures on the website, or somehow make an insert that we need an additional picture.
Oh, by the way, it's in the basement, it's in the green dragon on the right. It's near the finance library. It's called documentation.
And then after those pictures, or as committee chairs finish getting the pictures done, we're going to move over to McGraw to discuss goals for this semester, better ways to standardize reporting at assembly meetings, better ways to put information on the assembly website. All assembly members are welcome to come to that meeting if you'd like, even if you're not the chair of the committee.
So we're going to hit D&I as well as NetPrint, and then we will do the rest of the discussions, and elections. But we'll hit the reports regarding like other shared governance bodies, bylaw boards, student boards, as well as UA committees and faculty senate committees next week. So just to finish up, Travis, can you talk about elections? And we have Jim.
Where do you go? Hello, you guys. So, as you know, we're running a race for minority liaison at large. We have candidates running, so we will have a race. Right?
Yeah, for you running.
Yeah. Yeah.
Candidate.
Yes, two candidates.
It is the election period right now, if I'm not mistaken.
No, the election period ended yesterday. So everyone had to turn in everything. And actually at 6:45, we'll have our mandatory campaign meeting. And starting at 7:45 tonight, campaigning can actually begin. So as you all know, you guys are allowed to endorse candidates. So if they do reach out to me, you guys all can endorse me. It's going to be a little strict. You're taking that back from the room where the bodies are. Yep.
And, and it's just 1 week. I'll share all the election calendar with you guys as well, but all the information is also on the website. And we'll also be preparing for spring elections, which will start in early March. All that information is also public as well. All that is posted on the website as well.
Awesome. Dina.
So one of the discussions that we've been having on exec and universities has been the prospect of having a diversity and inclusion conference where we would bring together leaders or emerging leaders of bylaw organizations to essentially share diversity and inclusion practices that they are using and showcase really cool initiatives that they've come up with, not necessarily looking directly at, you know, the org that we typically look at, like orgs under Alana, and calling on those to essentially educate us, but more so looking at orgs like Opera Odyssey, and looking at their kind of practices and what we can learn from each other. And so the date originally, we were thinking about having it at the end of February, but that date is nearing, and I'm not that sure that we'd be able to get it done in time. We have a budget done and an event outline done, and Ryan Lombardi has committed to being our keynote, which is awesome. We're also going to reach out to PJ, and the week for that, I believe, is the second or third week of March. And yeah, so if you know any organizations that have great diversity and inclusion practices, please reach out to me so I can hook them up and see if they would like to do workshops. So yeah, very exciting. This is something that's, that diversity committee chairs have been talking about for the past 2 years. So I'm glad that it's actually happening this year. We're meeting on Sunday, this Sunday at 4:30. By the way, not committee members. So we've been also discussing banning the box on admissions applications. And so when we're applying for the Common App, there's a box that asks about criminal history. And we're looking at literature that essentially suggests that that is not necessary. And a lot of really cool universities like University of Minnesota, the SUNY system have opted to not ask that information. So I'm working with the Personal Farming Education Project in addition to my own committee to compile a literature review and to talk about how essentially we can target this campaign and make it a learning campaign and making sure that the student body is knowledgeable about this and knowledgeable about how the prison industrial complex really gets in the way of prospective student here that can be really qualified and should be a Cornellian but has a criminal background. So yeah, I've also been talking to someone in the University of Minnesota system who led the campaign last year and has successfully got their whole system to do away with that question. So yeah, that's why I was led to start with me. Also, at the meeting on Sunday, we'll be discussing a resolution that Joe's going to put forward about the LGBTQ Resource Center. And so, yeah, Joe's resolution.
Oh, yeah, hi, everyone.
It's going to be great.
All right, and then the last one is the Students in the Task Force on Net System.
So we're meeting for the first time next week, so we have, I think, 7 members now, and also RSC is joining on our efforts, and so we have Lizzie from RSC, she's going to be the co-chair, and also she's bringing one person from the RSC who is very interested in this, and so we'll be meeting next Tuesday to discuss what we're going to do.
Okay, now I have one quick update for the Culture Fest that we mentioned before, that we're in partnership with Alana. So right now, we have really talented people on the core team, and they have committees. So if you guys want to get involved, please just reach out to me or Travis or Myra. And also, if you guys are part of organization interest, and if you guys are also part of organizations that actually have money to spare, we do need the money for that. Yes, so just putting out there. And also, as a side note, someone stole my gavel. I'm actually surprised it took this long. Huh? Okay, well, oh, there it is. Okay, never mind. Thank you, John. I don't know where it was. So, thank you. And if anyone is looking for that, that's great. I'd like to adjourn this meeting. Second? Okay, it's my turn. And two minutes.
I am formally inviting Carlton to join us again this week. Can all other individuals in the room who are not voting ex-officio members of this week assembly please leave the room? Thank you. Carlton, you can actually come up and take a seat. As you can see on the agenda, we are going to fill the undergraduate seat on the post-discipline. University Assembly, all three stand by University Assembly, a seat reserved for a student assembly vote, and a seat reserved for any undergraduate.
Turn this off quickly.
Because this is a mid-year vacancy,